This is Ozarks at Large for Thursday, April 12, 2012. I'm Kyle Callums.
And I'm Ithi Agnihotri Madhokar.
KUAF is supported by Fayetteville Animal Shelter and Services, supported by the City of Fayetteville, and dedicated to the welfare of animals and the people who associate with them. 444-3456 or Fayetteville Animal Services on Facebook for photos and information.
Later on this edition of Ozarks, Hunting with the Ghost Hunters, we'll talk to an anthropologist who has been studying the people who spend time hunting for ghosts to better understand why they spend time doing what they do. And the militant grammarian is back for another visit.
That's ahead, but first, a look at some other items worthy of your attention on this Thursday. The latest employment numbers from the U.S. Bureau of Labor Statistics shows Northwest Arkansas has the lowest unemployment rate of all the metro areas in Arkansas. The unemployment rate for Northwest Arkansas in February rose slightly to 6.4%, an increase of one-tenth of a point from the previous month, but still below the 6.7% rate from February 2011. The Fort Smith metro region unemployment rate for February rose a bit as well to 9.1%. That's equal to the same rate as February 2011.
The Arkansas Lottery Commission is reaffirming a controversial contract with one of its largest vendors. As Beth McAvoy reports from Little Rock, the commission voted yesterday to approve Scientific Games contract.
Despite the commission's internal auditor's report calling for outside legal input, the commission approved the contract with the scratch-off ticket company. Scientific Games has received $7 million more than was originally intended so far. Commissioner Bruce Engstrom, along with one other, voted to delay any decision on the contract, which was amended by the former lottery director, without commission approval. Engstrom said he wanted to wait to see what Governor Beebe's investigation into the contract might find. Lottery director Bishop Woosley said invalidating the contract would suspend sales for several months, resulting in a loss of customers, sales, and millions of dollars in scholarship money.
They are our instant ticket vendor. It constitutes 84% of our revenue. You need to have a good relationship with them. You don't need, if I thought they owed us any money, I would do something. We would go out and do whatever is necessary. I disagree with the report.
Woosley says he hopes the matter can be put to bed. Scientific Games offered $2.2 million as a goodwill gesture, and Woosley says he hopes to get additional funds. Woosley says when the contract is up in 4 years, hopefully the commission can make better decisions. I'm Beth McAvoy in Little Rock.
The Arkansas Children's Hospital Research Institute is beginning a new program to fight childhood obesity. The program will research the causes of obesity and work with the community groups to promote healthy diet and exercise. Dr. Richard Jacobs is the president of the Arkansas Children's Hospital Research Institute. He says Arkansans need to find out how to effectively prevent obesity before a child's health is affected.
Prevention is the key. We're not sure yet in science and medicine what we can ultimately do for children who are already especially morbidly obese. But if we can direct research efforts to try to prevent childhood obesity, I think you can see the downstream beneficial effects, not only on those individuals and their families.
The Childhood Obesity Prevention Research Program plans to add researchers to study the program. It's being funded by federal grants and the Arkansas Tobacco Initiative. Dr. Jacobs says the program still needs another $3 to $5 million to get where they want to be. He says Children's Hospital Foundation has already donated $8 million worth of space and renovation for the project.
The University of Arkansas Fort Smith says the school's chancellor, Dr. Paul Barron, will deliver next month's commencement address. The school's May 5th event will be different than previous May commencements. There will be two separate ceremonies. The first commencement will be at 10, the second one at 3. The addition of a second commencement is a reflection of the growing enrollment at the school. UAFS officials say more than 600 degrees will be recognized during the commencements.
To mark the 100th anniversary of Governor Winthrop Rockefeller's birth, Dale Bumpers, David Pryor, and Ed Bethune are among dozens that will gather this week at Rockefeller's former home atop Pettigean Mountain. The free conference will examine the Republicans' record of political reform, including stopping prison abuse, shutting down illegal casinos in Hot Springs, and ousting much of previous Governor Orville Faubus's statewide political machine. Christy Carpenter of the Winthrop Rockefeller Institute says the conference agenda is wide-ranging.
We thought it fitting to do a conference that's focused on an area where he made such an impact in Arkansas during his time as governor, political reform, and his reforms were across many different areas, including prison reform and the end of ending cronyism and bringing a two-party system to Arkansas, which has made a huge difference in our history.
The conference begins with a welcome dinner tonight, then a full day of panel speeches and informal discussions. Most of the events are free, but you do have to pay for the dinner and lodging if staying overnight. For more information, livethelegacy.org.
An Arkansas business legacy is returning. Today, inside the state capitol, there will be a ceremony to acknowledge the return of Yarnell's Ice Cream. The Searcy-based company was purchased and brought out of dormancy by a Chicago-based biscuit company.
And the Northwest Arkansas Naturals begin their fifth home season at Arvest Ballpark tonight in Springdale. Yesterday, the team announced that its contract for player development with the Major League Baseball Kansas City Royals has been extended through 2016. This is Ozarks at Large. Dr. Misty Bastian is the chair of the Department of Anthropology at Franklin and Marshall College in Lancaster, Pennsylvania. Though much of her research has focused on spiritual practices in Western Africa, specifically Nigeria, she's now directed her energy to studying researchers who study paranormal entities. Bastian visited the University of Arkansas campus recently to present a lecture titled Spirit Communication in 21st Century America, Ghost Hunting and Digital Technologies. While she was here, she came by the Anthony and Susan Hoy News Studio to discuss with me and Ithi some of her experiences studying these paranormal researchers and how she got started.
I went into studying paranormal researchers because I wanted a project I could work with undergraduate students on. And I can't really take undergraduate students to Nigeria right now. It's a very difficult place to work.
Right.
But when I started working with paranormal researchers, I began to feel like it wasn't a whimsical project, a project at all, that in fact I thought it was a very serious project and a project that's much in line with work I've previously done on the anthropology of religion.
Was there a certain incident or something that convinced you it wasn't whimsical?
The way anthropologists work is not by incident. The way anthropologists work is by a sort of accumulation of activities, experiences, understandings. And it wasn't very long after I started working in what we call participant observation mode, where we both participate, which means we do what the people we're studying do and observe at the same time. Once I started doing participant observation with paranormal researchers, I found that what we were doing was, well, spirit communication, amongst other things. And that was what I was truly interested in and have always been interested in my entire career. And I realized I was dealing with serious people who are very interested and passionate in their own work, and I wanted to know more about how they got so passionate. And it stopped being a sort of one-off moment where I'll just do a quick paper on paranormal researchers, perhaps for a popular culture conference or something. And I started to think that, no, I wanted to really work with these people as people who are really questing and trying to understand their place in the world, their place in other worlds, too.
Mm-hmm. Now, you've spent a lot of time with these researchers. What are some of the characteristics that define them?
The one that's going to surprise the listeners the most is skepticism. They're extraordinarily skeptical people. They're not people who just believe the first thing that happens. They're very empirical, which is to say that they do empirical research. They try to understand and get evidence for anything that they want to sort of promulgate to us. And they're very concerned about the nature of that evidence and what it means. It's one reason why they're so technological in their orientation is that they want to get something that they can present, say, to the public and have the public understand it, appreciate it, maybe begin to help them understand it better. But they're not the people who the first thing that happens, they just think, oh, well, there's a ghost.
Right.
I don't know any paranormal researcher who will, like, point and say, that's a ghost, not a serious one. You know, there are some people who are just starting out who get very excited. Oh, this is great. I'm finding ghosts or whatever. But most of the people that I've been working with are people who've been working in the field for a long time. And they've seen too much and heard too much and also understood too little to feel that they absolutely can tell you whether there are spirits, what the spirits mean, what's going on with paranormal research.
How have the stereotypes of paranormal investigations on TV or movies or popular media helped or not helped this field of study?
Now, again, the audience may be surprised to learn that the paranormal researchers themselves really, really, really think it's a bad thing. Mm-hmm. That there's so much exposure of paranormal research on television, in the movies, and in other popular media. And they think it's a bad thing because they think it pulls a lot of people into the field who are what we might call wannabes, who just come in because they think, I'm going to become a celebrity, I'm going to become famous, I'm going to be on TV. And serious paranormal researchers have been, as it were, in the trenches since the 1970s, and most of them are not really interested in that kind of celebrity. It doesn't mean they'd say no if a TV show offered itself to them or whatever. But what it does mean is that they would rather have something more real. One of the sort of strange side effects of this project for me is that I came in, you know, I really liked Ghost Hunters, Jason and Grant. I thought that was very cool. And I thought, are there really people who do things like that? That's how I even decided to start the project. Now I can't watch those shows. And most of the truly serious paranormal researchers that I know have a hard time watching the shows as well because it just elides over all of the hard work of it.
Right.
There's a lot of sitting. One of my friends says, look, what we do, it's boring. We sit in the dark and we listen to nothing. And sitting in the dark and listening to nothing is not as attractive as what goes on in the TV shows.
Well, and the TV shows are edited to fit a 60-minute window.
And now they're very aware of that. But, you know, many of them, when they start out, they also get very engaged by the television shows. And they think, my life is going to be like that. A lot of people then become very disenchanted when they realize that it's going to be sitting in the dark in a listening to nothing. And so they, you know, they fall out. And most of the paranormal researchers that I know who've worked over a long period of time, they don't fall out. They've stayed with it. And they feel nothing but not contempt. They feel a sort of dispassion towards the people who do that because they think, well, they were never serious in the first place. They weren't really people who were trying to do this work. And they want to do the work of it. They understand it as work.
You can't paint anybody with a broad brush, be it the people of Appalachia or people who are paranormal researchers. But and I don't know if you even find this out about the people that you research, but do many of them come from a background of faith? Do many of them – or is it just like the general population?
Most of my research has been done in the state of Pennsylvania. Like I said, I got started as a project for undergraduates in my university, my college, which is Franklin and Marshall College. So my idea there was, here's something that's happening around here that we can investigate. But most of the Pennsylvania paranormal researchers, some of them have very strong backgrounds in the Catholic religion. Right. Others have very strong backgrounds in Protestant religion, and some come from a very non-denominational, non-Christian even background. But most people are what we would call white and middle class or aspiring middle class. They're working class people who aspire to be middle class. But a lot of the people I've talked to have college degrees. A lot of the people I talk to are in sort of professional or paraprofessional fields. So I think that they're aspiring middle-class people who just haven't quite made it out of the working class, even though they've got some of the cultural capital that should take them there. So for me, as an anthropologist, one of the things I'm really interested in is not what they believed in the past so much as what they practice today. Mm-hmm. And what they practice today is an interesting form of something that's been practiced for a very, very long time in human history, which is a desire to speak with spirits. Right. What's different and new is that they use things like these microphones here to do it.
You know, since, well, before Harry Houdini, but of course Harry Houdini was a grand debunker of people. There has been, it seems like, well, more than two, but two distinct groups. People who want to talk to spirits and then people who are pretty hardcore skeptics. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to ask you what you think necessarily, but has your place on the spectrum changed at all since this project?
I'm not a believer in anything, frankly. I'm an anthropologist, and that means I question all things human. So I'm not a believer in that sense. However, I am an experiencer, just like all human beings are experiencers. And one of the things that's happened, which was an interesting side product again for me, was that I experienced things. Some of the things that my colleagues in the field experience, I have experienced them. And a lot of this happened like from the very first time I went out on a ghost hunt, as you might call it, and I had to make a decision. Am I going to tell them that I'm the one who's getting the cold chills? Right. And am I going to tell them that I'm the one who's having some kind of a strange, like, cold wind go around my hands? Or am I going to sit back and I'm just going to pretend it's not happening to me and observe what everyone is doing? And I took the plunge that day and said, no, you know, what anthropologists do is we own up to it. So I owned up to it. And then I had the interesting experience of having all the equipment sort of turned towards me and everyone. I became the center of their investigation. And I would say, in general, that has been the best strategy. If I had just backed back and said, I won't admit to any feelings or experiences or bodily sort of experiences, which is something they're very interested in, then I would have gotten some of the story, but I don't think I would have gotten very far in the end. The fact that I am willing to put myself out there with the paranormal researchers generally has meant that I get some respect from them, and I respect them more because I know something of what they're experiencing, only something. I'm not sure I always agree with all their theories, but they themselves say that these are theories and not established fact.
Okay.
Ghost tourism is certainly a different thing from paranormal research, but so many people are attracted to it. The Crescent Hotel's been doing it for a long time. You go to New Orleans and you can have a haunted tour almost anywhere. Mm-hmm. What does that say about us anthropologically? I mean, we are interested, be we skeptics or no, we are interested in what could be out there?
Mm-hmm. I think human beings like what gives us a little sensation, right? I mean, it's a sensationalist thing. I can tell you from the point of view of business, right, mm-hmm. that one thing that's happened with ghost tourism is these are often extensions of walking tours in historic districts that people have already established. And what the business people learned was they can now double their money because they can have nighttime tours as well as daytime tours. Previously, all these walking tours were daytime tours. With a ghost tour, you just add some ghost stories, stir, and walk people around a district at night, voila, double your income. There's actually a great tour in Washington, D.C. It surprised me what a good tour it was. It just takes you around one square, which is the square by the White House. But by the time you get to the White House, they have pretty much scared you silly with all the stories of ghosts all around the square. So it's one square, but it is one of the best tours that I've been on because it really gives a sense of there's just so much history here. A lot of ghost tours are history tours plus a little scare.
Dr. Misty Bastian is a professor of anthropology at Franklin and Marshall College in Lancaster, Pennsylvania. She visited the University of Arkansas recently to talk about her time spent studying paranormal researchers. To listen to some of her observations regarding these researchers, including some famous ghost stories in an audio extra, log on to ozarksatlarge.com.
Hello, this is Robert Ginsberg, your host for Shades of Jazz every Friday night from 10 till midnight. On this Friday's program, we'll hear music from trumpeter Sean Jones and also pianist Bobby Timmons, Duke Ellington, John Coltrane, Lionel Luecke, and some vocal work from Nina Freelon. This and much more. That's on Shades of Jazz, Friday nights at 10 p.m.
It It is Thursday, April 12th, 2012. I'm Kyle Kellams.
I'm Iti Agnihotri Madholkar.
And with us is Becca Martin Brown, features editor at Northwest Arkansas Newspapers.
What you can't see is Kyle working this out with his hands because first I threw him with a title change. Now I threw him with a name change. We're all confused.
And since you've been coming into the studio, the newspaper you work for has changed names a couple of times.
Yeah. So,
or the news entity or whatever.
Yeah.
So nothing is as it used to be.
No, except that I'm still here to tell you what's going on today. So all hang right. out.
So,
Friends of the Library book sale through Saturday at the Boone County Library in Harrison.
Sounds like a lot of fun.
Last one of those I went to, I carried home two boxes. Free flicks before 6 at the Fayetteville Public Library at 5:30, obviously, since it's before 6.
Right.
Tonight is The Adventures of Tintin.
You
Great
love that
movie.
If you love that movie.
And is there anybody who doesn't know the name Bella Fleck?
Well, there might be, but the people who know that name are enamored with him and his band.
The people who know that name are probably already in line at the Walton Arts Center for the show tonight at 7 with the Flecktones original lineup.
Yeah.
Tickets start at $28 if there are any left at 443-5600.
There's always a waiting line at Walton Arts Center,
yes.
too.
Ricky Nelson will be remembered tonight.
Oh, that's right.
By his sons Matthew and Gunnar, 7:30 at the Alma Performing Arts Center. Tickets start at $20. If you remember Ozzie and Harriet, if you remember Ricky Nelson, what was the name? Garden Party?
Yeah.
Was his
I
big
went
hit.
To a garden party.
If you remember Nelson, which was his kids. You can find out more at 632-2129. And the UAFS Jazz Cats play tonight at 7:30 at the Arkansas Best Performing Arts Center in Fort Smith. Guest performer is Andy Martin, and tickets are $8.
You got all kinds of options on this Thursday night.
It's that time of year.
It is, isn't it? Yes.
Thank you, Becca. Becca Martin Brown is the features editor with Northwest Arkansas Newspapers.
This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Kyle Kellams. With me, our militant grammarian, Catherine Schultz. How are you?
I'm good today.
The last couple times you've been here, we've been talking about top 10 grammar peeves, something that was posted on Facebook. But even more interesting, some of the comments that the top 10 peeves list created.
Yes. And one of the leading complaints on the list was people who say, I couldn't care less, when they mean I could care less.
Right. This has long bothered me. And you hear this a lot. I couldn't care less if you're coming to the party. Oh, well, then.
You really want
yeah,
me there.
Exactly, exactly.
And what it is, it's a double negative problem.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I can't hardly believe it.
Right.
Hardly means scarcely or barely. And so to say I can't hardly believe it means I don't not believe it.
So what you're actually saying is I believe it.
Exactly. Makes your head spin, doesn't it?
It does.
And Kyle, do you remember what we discussed a little while ago about the non-standard word irregardless?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Well, it too is a double negative problem. Regardless means showing no regard.
Right.
So to add IR, ear, means not or the opposite of, and you come up with, I show the opposite of no regard.
Right. So you're showing regard.
Regard. So it matters to you. So irregardless means that really matters to me.
So what would you do if someone, now keeping in mind irregardless is not a word to begin
right.
with, but if they used it in what would be a right way?
Oh.
That'd be very confusing, wouldn't it?
It would. I mean, it would make one's head spin. And,
yes.
And I would hardly ever believe that someone really.
I
can't hardly believe that you really think that irregardless means regardless. Means
right.
that you care. Well, another of the top 10 grammar peeves was one that I'd seen in such lists before. It says that I have not ever seen lists before, and that says, nonplus does not mean what you think it means. What do you think it
well,
means?
Well, I used to. My colleague Iti Agnihotri Madholkar was one who kind of showed me about this. I used to think nonplus meant meh, kind of meh, I don't care. you know, I have no opinion one way or the other. But that's not what it means. She showed me in the dictionary.
It caused to cause to be at a loss as to what to say or think, to be perplexed.
Right.
That's what it means. And we often use it in the past participle form with a W word, like I was nonplussed or they were nonplussed. Well, I knew what it meant, so I had to look up what people who don't know what it means think it means. And just as you said, that perhaps to be calm and poised, nonplussed,
right.
But those of us who get nonplussed at bad usage know that the opposite is true.
Thank you, Catherine. Mm-hmm. This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Kyle Kellums.
I'm Iti Agnihotri Matholkar.
And as is our Thursday custom, Jody Beznoska, Vice President for Communications at Walton Arts Center, is here.
Hello.
Howdy.
Hi.
Hello.
You've got the original Flecktones in the building tonight.
Yes, we do. And I will be there. And hopefully many of you will be there also. This is a 7 o'clock show tonight. Bela Fleck and the original lineup. I'm happy to say it's almost sold out. But almost means there are still tickets. So if you missed getting these, please come out and see this. This is going to be a pretty special evening. Lots of different musical styles with Bela Fleck. I'm not terribly familiar, honestly. I know lots of people really know and love this music, but I can't wait to hear it. I think it's going to be really fun. That's this evening, 7 p.m. Also going on tonight, I think it's preview night for Theater Squared.
It is.
And their new show, The Fall of the House. Mm-hmm. Tomorrow night, Friday, is their official opening night. This is going to run through May 6th. It is a new play written by Bob Ford, who is the artistic director of T2 and, you know, sort of a local celebrity playwright. It's a mystery. It's got some literary ties in there. I think it's going to be a very rich, deep, engrossing kind of show. That is running for, I believe it's 4 weeks, from Friday through the 6th of May.
Yeah,
so
that's
lots
about
of
right.
chances to see that. And then Saturday, we will have the final concert of the Symphony of Northwest Arkansas season. This is their Masterworks 3 concert. It's a 7:30 p.m. performance. There's a 6:45 creative conversation with...
I'll be there.
Kyle will be there talking to Paul Haas. And this is the culminating concert of their first full season as Symphony of Northwest Arkansas. Sounds like, from what I know, it's going to be a very epic, romantic, sweeping night of music.
Lush is the word that I've heard used for
a
this
very
music.
Good
Mendelssohn,
word.
Yes.
Yeah, and for Beethoven's Ninth, which is just, you know, obviously that big symphony that everyone knows with all those voices.
Right.
Lots of different choirs are involved with this particular show as well. So it's going to be a big night for Sona, and it's so exciting for them, obviously, to finish up their first season and have had such great crowds and such great music, and it's going to be neat to see what Paul has up his sleeve for this one. So that's Saturday. And then next week, I don't keep official tally of these things, but I would venture to guess that next week might be one of the busiest weeks we have among the staff at Walton Arts Center next week.
Well, good, because it's one of the busiest weeks everybody seems to have. this third week in April.
Yeah, it's kind of insane, actually. Mm-hmm. We have Mary Poppins here at last. She will be flying in on the 17th of April, and that will run for a full week through Sunday the 22nd. The thing about this is it's been selling so well that I think there might be a perception that it's sold out. It's not. There are still a few hundred tickets remaining. They are in the balcony, most of them. But as anyone who has been to Walton Arts Center knows, balcony seats are great seats.
Yeah, they are.
And I would actually say, having seen Mary Poppins, seeing it from the balcony would be really almost ideal, because it's a very big show. There's a lot of production value to it. There are people flying everywhere, big, bright costumes, huge, wonderful dance patterns. So if you're thinking, there's no good seats left, I hope you'll give it a shot. Come and see it in the balcony, because it's really a big, bright, and fun show. The fun thing about Mary Poppins, among all the fun things, is that it has a Arkansas native in it. Case Dillard, who plays Bert, is in it. And I think, obviously, he'll be very excited to be back in Arkansas. So that's all going on, and that's a pretty big deal. And then we'll also be opening the amp next week, the new amp at the Washington County Fairgrounds.
Right.
So on the 19th, we will have Cake out there, and on the 21st, we will have Big Gigantic. So two very different shows.
Just point out to those who might not realize what you just said, Cake is a band.
Yes.
You're not going to just have...
No, we will not be handing out...
You thought there might be a bake-off?
No, this is a band. Yes. There will be no cake. Yes.
No, we will not be handing out lots of cake.
Yes.
Although, I suppose we could. That would be kind of funny.
Yeah, that would
but,
be awesome.
But no, Cake is a band that was very popular during the 90s, and they continue to produce. And it's going to be exciting. The amp, as you all know, was located at the mall for 7 years, at the mall in Fayetteville. And this season, we've moved out to the Washington County Fairgrounds. So it's a very different experience than if you've come to the amp in the past. It's a big field. It's going to be much cooler, hopefully, than normally sitting on the asphalt. And it's going to be it's going to feel more festival-like, I think, if we're out there in the... out there at the fairgrounds. So that's next week. And then the following week, also very busy, but for different reasons. The following week we were just discussing is the actual official 20th year anniversary of Walton Arts Center.
From the opening day.
From the opening day, April 24th. And so we'll be having some fun, some little, you know, community celebrations related to that. And I actually think it's entirely appropriate what we're going to talk about next that is happening during that week.
Okay.
Because
okay.
that week... that when Walton Arts Center opened, one of the visions for it was a place to serve students. Mm-hmm. The founders of Walton Arts Center had a real desire to see yellow buses pulling up and dumping kids out there and getting them to experience the arts. And so what's going to happen on the 24th, 25th, and 26th is we will have a play by a group called Visible Fictions, and they will be doing a children's theater version of Zorro, The Legend of Zorro. And this is a group that we've seen at the Arts Center before. Mm-hmm. They did Jason and the Argonauts a couple years back. They're a really solid and wonderful kids' theater. And they will be here doing probably 5 or 6 shows just for the schools. And so
great.
We'll have buses full of kids coming through on our 20th anniversary week.
So 5 or 6 shows times 1,100 or 1,200 young people?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So do the math. We're looking at, you know, 3,000 or 4,000 or 5,000 kids coming through that just that week alone. And that's pretty special.
And if you're going to waltonartscenter.org to look for tickets for Zorro.
There aren't any for the public, unfortunately.
Okay.
Hopefully, if you have a little one and they're in the schools, maybe they're coming to see it. But no, there are times in our programming where we will just bring a show in for the schools because the schools want the shows and we need to bring them in. And we try to, when we do these kids performances, we try to have the shows on weekends so that, you know, it's easier for parents. If we do it for public, it's easier for parents to come out. And when we booked this one, it was the middle of the week. So that doesn't really work. But it's really great. It's a really nice sort of circle that, you know, coming back that week, what's going to be going on is kids programming because that's really... that's one of the main reasons we exist. You know, for all the time we spend talking about selling tickets, all of those tickets and all of the donations and the support we get from everybody goes directly into making sure kids have arts in their schools. So that's just the 24th, 25th, and 26th. And then speaking of legendary things, we'll have Glenn Campbell there for 2 nights on the
27th. Two shows now, right.
Yep, on the 27th and the 28th. Also on the 28th out at the Amp will be Hank Williams Jr., and that will wrap up April. And then we will be into May. And I just wanted to get everybody planning to hang out with us on the first week of May for the kickoff of Artisphere.
I was going to say, that's knocking on the door.
Yeah, the Arts and Nature Festival. The opening night of that is going to be such fun. It's going to be Thursday the 3rd. So first Thursday will happen up at the square, and then we will have all kinds of things going on down at Walton Arts Center. We'll be opening a new gallery exhibition called Structuring Nature, and that explores how artists interpret nature and structure together in our gallery space, which will be great. That will open, and we'll have curator remarks by our curator for that. We're going to have live music on the plaza. We will have Three Penny Acre, and we will also have a Canadian fiddler named April Virch. She's fantastic, and it'll be a real treat to hear her for people. And then the big event that night is the conversation with Michael Pollan.
Mm-hmm.
It's a 7:30 conversation. And Michael Pollan for those who don't recognize his name, hopefully you recognize the books he's written. He's written The Omnivore's Dilemma, In Defense of Food, Food Rules.
Right.
And a couple of others. And he's a journalist, mm-hmm. and he is exploring food and how diets work and how I think it's safe to say he's definitely a farmer's market fan. You know, mm-hmm. he likes the idea of fresh food and, you know, people eating things that come from nearby. So
tickets for that have gone on sale.
They have, yes. And this is one of the few Artisphere events that actually do have tickets assigned to it.
Now, based on just people I've talked to, mm-hmm. if it isn't sold out, you better hurry, because I know a lot of people are planning on buying tickets.
Yeah, this is really exciting to have him here. We've been hoping to get him for a couple of years. And, of course, I should mention that you're going to be our interviewer for him, which is really,
I'm looking
really
very
great.
Forward to it.
Really great. But, yeah, I would get your tickets quickly for this. There are plenty left as of right now, but I anticipate they'll go pretty fast as we get closer. Still, you know, 3 or 4 weeks off. People aren't quite feeling the urgency yet, but hopefully they will soon. Anyway, it's a very, very busy couple of weeks. Tomorrow, actually, we will have another AMP show going on sale. Daughtry, who is an American Idol performer.
Is he the bald guy?
Yes.
Okay.
He looks very much like Vin Diesel.
I know who you're talking
That's
about.
Right.
Yes.
What kind of music? I got to admit, I don't know anything about him, really.
No idea.
Okay.
I've just heard my friends mention him and they're pretty excited.
Yeah.
Okay.
So maybe we'll talk more about him as we get a little closer to his show, which will actually be later in the summer.
Maybe
but his on sale is tomorrow.
I guess.
Country pop? That seems like what everyone that wins American Idol. Did he win American Idol?
I don't know.
I don't think so.
But he became famous because he was. Yes.
I think he might have been a finalist.
Okay.
Says the girl who, you know, has watched one episode of American Idol in her whole life. But anyway, really fun stuff going on. Lots of busy things. A great weekend to come out and support local productions with Theater Squared and Sona coming up this current weekend, and then Mary Poppins next week. WaltonArtsCenter.org or 443-5600 for tickets, or you can drive down and park in the parking lot until 2 p.m., which is free, and then come across and see us at the box office.
You can park after 2.
You can park
it's
after 2.
It's just not
two,
free
but it's
then.
Not free then.
Right.
But, yeah, come see us at the box office, and also we're going to be shutting down the exhibition by Jeannie Hewlin from the art department at the university. She has an exhibition up in our gallery, so if you wanted to come catch that before it goes away, that would be great too.
All right.
Thank you, Jody.
Thank you, guys.
Jody Biznoska is the Vice President of Communication at Walton Arts Center.
At All Things Considered, we don't just bring you the day's news. We interview actors, musicians, and artists of all stripes and take the time to understand what really drives them. We learn the story behind the story to get at the deeper truths that connect us all. I'm Melissa Block. Stop by for your daily dose of discovery every afternoon on All Things Considered from NPR News.
All Things Considered, weekdays 3 to 6 p.m. on KUAF 91.3 FM.
Still to come on this edition of Ozarks at Large, by the way, a trivia question that can earn you free tickets to the finale of the Sona season.
Mm-hmm. And the question is very interesting, just to let you know.
And I'm going to tell you, if you want to get your periodic table of elements handy, that will help you.
Yes, it will.
KUAF is supported by Crystal Bridges Museum of American Art, celebrating the American spirit by uniting the power of art with the beauty of nature. The museum opens at 11 a.m. daily, except Tuesdays. More information is available online at crystalbridges.org.
And we'd like to say, in fact, KUAF would like to say thank you to the nearly 1,200 contributing listeners who donated over $150,000 during our spring on-air fundraiser. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. You've shown once again how public radio can be supported by those who care enough to call and contribute. Thank you for making KUAF possible for your own community.
From Little Rock, I'm Stephen Cook. With Arkansongs.
Oh, darling, you can't love two. Oh, darling, you can't love two. You can't love two, and your little heart be true. Oh, darling, you can't love two.
The Anthology of Arkansas Folk Songs is an annotated 2-CD set packed with dozens of performers, but it represents less than 1.5% of the collection it's drawn from. The anthology, released by the Center for Arkansas and Regional Studies, features just 57 of the approximately 4,000 performances found in the Mary C. Parler Archive of Arkansas Folk Music, which is housed in the Special Collections Division of the University of Arkansas Library in Fayetteville. Professor Mary Celestia Parler and her assistants recorded at least 600 Arkansas instrumentalists and singers from 1949 through 1965, with an emphasis on the Ozarks. This recording, with Leroy Gardner and Burl Langford performing, was recorded 1954 in Hinesville.
You can't love five. Oh, darling, you can't love five. You can't love five and be an angel high. Oh, darling, you can't love five.
It was one evening in March when the storm struck Brinkley Town. It seemed like God in heaven looked down on Brinkley and frowned.
Disc 2 of the Anthology of Arkansas Folk Songs opens with The Brinkley Storm by Zula Crimes, identified as Mrs. Jim Crimes of Deval's Bluff. The song accounts an actual cyclone storm of March 8, 1909, that killed 35 people in Brinkley alone. Crimes sang the song from a ballad book that had belonged to her uncle, Dalton Williams, of Desark.
Steamboat Bill, we're up the Mississippi. Steamboat Bill, the tide has made him swear. Steamboat Bill, we're up the Mississippi. Explosion of the boiler got him up in the air.
Mary Parler, who gathered the archive, reportedly would turn off her tape recorder when performers would attempt to play, quote, hillbilly junk. But the Parler Archive of Arkansas Folk Music is still quite inclusive. There are Baptist hymns sung in Cherokee, as well as songs that had been commercial hits, including by such well-known hillbillies as the Carter family. Steamboat Bill, heard here, was a hit in 1910. It is performed by Warren Walker, a student in Mary Parler's class. The recording is from 1960 in Fayetteville.
This year's one of these old cotton picking blues I'm fit to put on here, and I hope everybody will like it.
Another student of Mary Parler's was on the other side of the microphone in the recording heard here. John Logan of Burdette in Mississippi County recorded A.D. Robinson in Burdette performing Cotton Picking Blues. But the CD set of the Anthology of Arkansas Folk Songs focuses more on the Ozark recordings of the Mary Parler Archive. The Center for Arkansas and Regional Studies also has a gospel release from the Parler Archive called While I Run This Race. From Disc 2 of the Anthology of Arkansas Folk Songs, here in its entirety is My Home in Arkansas, recorded 1950 in Farmington in Washington County. Also known as My Happy Little Home in Arkansas, it's performed by Donnie Hammontree. Born in 1876, Hammontree contributed 73 songs to the Mary Parler Archive of Arkansas Folk Music.
Come and see me, neighbor, come along. I'll be there to greet you one and all. 'Tis the finest country found, and I'll show you all around at my happy little home in Arkansas. We'll go out on the mountain, and we'll see the mineral springs. Go and see the big plantation down below. Show you cotton, show you cane, show you every kind of grain at my happy little home in Arkansas. Come and see me, neighbor, come along. I'll be there to greet you one and all. 'Tis the finest country found, and I'll show you all around at my happy little home in Arkansas.
Donnie Hammontree recorded in 1950 in Farmington with My Home in Arkansas. It's just one of the approximately 4,000 performances in the Mary C. Parler Archive of Arkansas Folk Music, and one of 26 songs from Disc 2 of the Anthology of Arkansas Folk Songs, edited by Alan Spurgeon, Rachel Reynolds, and Bob Cochran, and issued by Fayetteville Center for Arkansas and Regional Studies and the University of Arkansas Library Special Collections Division. It's another song of Arkansas. From Little Rock, I'm Stephen Cook with Arkansongs.
Arkansongs is a production of FM 89 and Experiment Station Studios. Associate producer of Arkansongs is Keith Merks. For more information or to subscribe to the podcast, visit arkansongs.org.
And as promised a few minutes earlier, we do have a trivia question.
Do you have your periodic table handy?
Because I don't have mine, but you have yours. Okay. Winners today, all correct answers go into the ceramic cow, mm-hmm. and then we will pick two winners today. Both winners will receive a pair of tickets to Saturday night's performance by the Symphony of Northwest Arkansas.
This is the final performance.
Of the first season. Mm-hmm. And it's Mendelssohn, and it's Beethoven's Ninth. It's mm-hmm. going to be great. Your tickets will be available at will call, so you don't have to wait for them in the mail.
What is the question, Kyle?
Okay,
what is the question?
So the periodic table of elements, if you look at them, you know, and each square has the symbol. The one or two letter symbol,
right.
A number. But what we're concerned about today is the actual word,
right.
Like helium or oxygen.
The full name of an
right.
element.
And my question is simply this. What is the only three-letter element? The only element, proper name, that you can spell with just three letters.
And it's so easy, but it's just...
You didn't... When I brought this up yesterday,
I couldn't think of it.
Right.
But it's so easy when you told me.
Okay,
1-800-522-KUAF.
1-800-522-5823. Best of luck.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Thursday. It's the 12th of April, 2012. It's the birthday of the writer John Krakauer, born in Brookline, Massachusetts, 1954. Raised in Oregon, where he took up mountain climbing, worked as a carpenter and worked as a commercial salmon fisherman to support his climbing habit. And after he'd done three climbs up in Alaska, he was asked to write an article about it, and he did, and that got him into magazine writing. In 1993, he got an assignment from Outside Magazine to write about a young man who'd graduated from college, changed his name, left his family, his savings behind, and walked into the Alaskan wilderness to make a new life out there and perished 4 months later. And that became his first book, Into the Wild. It became a bestseller in 1996 and was later made into a movie. The year that book was published, Krakauer was assigned by Outside to climb Mount Everest and write an article about the commercialization of climbing. But a blizzard struck during the climb, and 8 of the 23 people in the group died. Krakauer kept detailed notes. He reached the summit, sleep-deprived, oxygen-deprived, came back, wrote an article about it, and then a book called Into Thin Air. Gustave Flaubert's first novel, Madame Bovary, was published on this day, 1857, about a woman who takes on multiple affairs to stave off the boredom of her empty existence. The novel caught the attention of the authorities, and Flaubert was charged with corrupting public morals. He was acquitted, and the publicity from the trial made the book a bestseller. It's the birthday of Gary Soto, born in Fresno, California, 1952. The son of Mexican-American factory workers, had an abusive, alcoholic stepfather. The boy picked up a poem entitled Unwanted, a poem by Edward Field when he was 19, and it spoke to him, and he decided to write poetry. Soto started keeping a journal, took a creative writing class, published his first book when he was 25, called The Elements of San Joaquin, a collection of poems about his father and factory workers like him, which got him a professorship at Berkeley. Last year, he published his first e-book, a young adult novel called When Dad Came Back. Here's a poem by Jane Kenyon, entitled Thinking of Madame Bovary. The first hot April day, The granite step was warm. Flies droned in the grass. When a car went past, they rose in unison, then dropped back down. I saw that a yellow crocus bud had pierced a dead oak leaf, then opened wide. How strong its appetite for the luxury of the sun. Everyone longs for love's tense joys and red delights. And then I spied an ant dragging a ragged disembodied wing up the warm brick walk. It must have been the Methodist in me that leaned forward, preceded by my shadow, to put a twig just where the ant was struggling with its own desire. Thinking of Madame Bovary by Jane Kenyon from Otherwise, New and Selected Poems, published by Grey Wolf Press and used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac. Supported by the Poetry Foundation, you can turn your iPhone or Android into a virtual poetry library with the Poetry Foundation's Poetry app. Available to everyone online at poetryfoundation.org. Produced by Kathy Roach and Nick Vetter. Be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
All right, time to answer the question. And it was about the periodic table of elements.
It was. What is the only three-lettered element on the periodic table?
When you think about it, there are several four-letter ones. There's
right.
Lead.
Lead. And we looked up some more yesterday that we cannot remember today.
But at this very moment. But the only three-letter element is?
Tin.
I know. And
tin.
It's hard. I think if you, especially if you're perhaps a liberal arts person, it's hard to remember that tin is an element. Tin sounds like something you put on your chicken coop.
But I think the Latin word for tin is stannus.
Mm-hmm. And so the symbol is?
It's SN.
Right.
Right.
Once you started thinking about the periodic table of elements yesterday, you
or
started—
stannum, sorry. Stannus is the— I don't remember what it was, but stannus and stannic are the two. Sorry, I'm getting into the details.
Well, you've obviously learned more about it and remembered more about it than I did.
Sorry.
We'll pull a couple of correct names out of the ceramic cow and give you a call if you've won the tickets.
This is KUAF 91.3 FM, Fayetteville, Springdale, Rogers, Bentonville, Zinc, a listener-supported service of the University of Arkansas J. William Fulbright College of Arts and Sciences, pursuing peace through education at arkansas.edu/Fulbright.
Support for KUAF comes from Northwest Arkansas's Earth Day Festival. This 40-day festival continues through Monday, May 14th, at a variety of locations with events, parties, and learning opportunities. The Eco Passport, a detailed calendar of events, and more available on the web at earthdaynwa.com. The AMP, Arkansas Music Pavilion, presents Big Gigantic with guest Paper Diamond on Saturday, April 21st at the Washington County Fairgrounds. This evening will offer a mix of electronic, jazz, and hip-hop music. Tickets and more information are available at arkansasmusicpavilion.com.
Ozarks at Large is a production of KUAF. I'm Ithi Agnihotri Madholkar.
I'm Kyle Kellums.
Thanks for listening.
Have a great Thursday. Antoinette Grajeda and I together for a brand new edition tomorrow at noon.
And we'll be back on Sunday.
With the weekend edition of Ozarks.
Ozarks at Large.
Thanks,
Ithi. It's always fun. Thank you.
Sometimes late when things are real and people share the gift of gab between themselves. Some are quick to take the bait and catch the perfect prize that waits among the shells. But Oz never did give nothing to the Tin Man that he didn't already have, and cause never was a reason for the evening or the tropics.